You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Crisis Radio. We are broadcasting worldwide, streaming on the internet. We're doing shortwave. We're doing low power FM in many localities. This is another landmark briefing today, and it goes together with the emergency briefing that we had last week, a special 2-hour strategic briefing on the imminence of general war in the Middle East, and therefore the imminence of a slide at whatever velocity into nuclear World War III. Now, today in Munich, at the International Security Conference of the Wehrkundegesellschaft, the Military Science Society, I guess, of Germany. This is the 43rd annual meeting of the Wehrkunde. It's a very important international security conference that gathers together all kinds of government officials from various countries. This is the first time that Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, had attended this Wehrkunde International Security Conference in Munich, and he used this occasion to issue an emergency briefing of his own, 32 minutes in Munich. Now, I ask people to bear with me. I have not been able to get the complete text of Putin's speech. What you want to do is keep checking Kremlin.ru. Just Google in Kremlin or Google in President of Russia, and sometime within the next day or so, I'm sure they'll have it up. As of an hour ago or so, they did not have it up. So I'm relying on wire services, New York Times, Washington Post, Le Monde, and others for this epic-making speech. The speech must be considered a warning of World War III. It talks about a nuclear arms race going on. It is a philippic against the Bush regime and the United States, even though there's a nice attempt to be nice to Bush as an individual built in during the question and answer period. Putin accuses the United States of provoking a new nuclear arms race by developing ballistic missile defenses, undermining international institutions, and preparing further destabilizations in the Middle East. He's also extremely worried about NATO expansion, and we'll get back to this in just a second. Let's get right into some quotes from Putin. Now, some of this may be repetitive, and some of it may be a little bit different because different translators see these things in different ways, but by the time we're finished here in the next couple of minutes, you'll get a pretty good idea of why this is a landmark war warning speech. Back in a minute here on RBN. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley speaking from Washington, D.C., and the centerpiece today of a chilling briefing, the worst strategic picture that I have seen since the Cuban Missile Crisis, is the unmistakable war warning delivered by Russian President Vladimir Putin to the Wehrkundegesellschaft Conference in Munich, the annual security conference held in the capital of Bavaria in southern Germany. 32-minute speech which has essentially confronted the assembled aggressors, that is to say Gates, McCain, Lieberman, Lindsey Graham, and other apostles of aggression and unipolarism. He has confronted them with the world that they are now creating and how dangerous that world is. Putin says the grave danger in the world today is the emergence of a unipolar world, a world with only one center. As he says, this means one single center of power, one single center of force, one single center of decision making. This is the world of one master, one sovereign. And he points out that that master does not benefit from such a unipolar world, because this kind of global role, as far as the master state is concerned, destroys it from within. It has nothing in common with democracy, of course. Getting down to cases, Putin says, today we are witnessing an almost uncontained hyper use of force in international relations, and that means military force. Now, concerning this hyper use, this is variously translated as hypertrophy, in other words, growing out of all proportion. Today we are witnessing an almost uncontained hypertrophy of force in international relations, that is to say military force. Who does it? Primarily the United States has overstepped its national borders, and in every area, says Putin. American military actions are unilateral, illegitimate. They have not been able to resolve any matters at all. They always bring us to the abyss of one conflict after another. Political solutions are becoming impossible. At the end of it, we had whining, of course, from McCain, whining from Lieberman, long faces from Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, whining from Lindsey Graham. Putin got a long list of questions from people there, Gates and so forth. And when he saw all the questions that he had, he said, I love it. Putin points out that he is still ready for peace. I assume Russia and the United States will never be enemies. I agree with that, says Putin, quoting a throwaway line from Bush. Putin says the United States may be hiding extra nuclear warheads under the pillow for future use, but the answer to that will be the new Russian ballistic missile, the Topol-M. Now, he also points out, concerning the international institutions, some questions about this are highly relevant. NATO expansion, the fact that there's even a proposal for Ukraine to become a member of NATO, a piece of insanity that has got to be blocked. The process of NATO expansion has nothing to do with the modernization of this alliance. We have the right to ask, against whom, against what state is this expansion directed? Concerning the Helsinki conference, the OSCE, Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, that's supposed to be concerned about human rights, he says this has become the vulgar instrument of ensuring the foreign policy interests of one country. Guess what? It's the United States again. He points out, ironically, rubble from the Berlin Wall was hauled away as souvenirs to various countries that praise openness and personal freedom. But now there are attempts to impose new dividing lines and rules, perhaps virtual, but still dividing our mutual continent. That means, of course, Europe. Now let's go on to some other quotations. So far we've been following the New York Times quotes. Let's move ahead now again. You bear with us because of the fact that we were not able to get. Here we go with the Agence France-Presse version. The United States has overstepped its borders in all spheres, economic, political, humanitarian, and has imposed itself on other states. It is a unipolar world. This means one thing, one center of power, one center of force, one center of decision-making, a world of one master, one sovereign. Such a situation is extremely dangerous. No one feels secure because no one can hide behind the wall of international law. Local and regional wars have not diminished in number. The people who have died are not fewer, but their numbers have increased. We see no kind of restraint. We see a hyper-inflated use of force. The United States has gone from one conflict to another without achieving a full-fledged solution to any of them. There's also the matter of the great human rights establishment led by the Washington Post interfering in Russian domestic affairs. He says, there are those who accuse us of backtracking on democracy. The United States, he hints, are permanently teaching Russia lessons about democracy. But those who teach us, for some reason, don't really want to study democracy themselves. He's concerned about the anti-ballistic missile defenses to be located in the Czech Republic and Poland. He said, why is it necessary to put military infrastructure on our border? It is hardly connected to today's global threats. What is the real threat? Well, it's terrorism, he says. But if you're worried about Iran, why put an ABM installation on the border between in the Czech Republic and in Poland? Now, the NATO Secretary General, De Hoop Scheffer, says, I can't hide my disappointment. I will not hide my disappointment. Plus, we have whining from McCain and Lieberman, the two warmongers who have been exposed by this. Another very important quote. This is now the Associated Press version of Putin's speech today at the Munich Wehrkundegesellschaft International Security Conference. One state, the United States, has overstepped its national borders in every way. This is nourishing an arms race with the desire of countries to get nuclear weapons. And at another point, I think he says, small countries in particular are being encouraged, they're being forced, impelled to seek nuclear weapons by the nature of the aggressive stance and the unilateralism of the United States. Concerning these ABM systems, anti-ballistic missile systems, Putin says, I don't want to accuse anyone of being aggressive or an aggressor, but these things seriously change the balance of power and will evoke a response. Putin's spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, says that this was not a desire for confrontation that motivated Putin to be so blunt at this time. He says the reason for his comments is Russia's concern about the growing number of conflicts and the malfunctioning, perhaps the breakdown, of international law, says Peskov, the spokesman for Putin. The theme of this conference was global crises, global responsibilities, had to do with NATO's changing role, Middle East peace process, Western relations with Russia, and the fight against terrorism. Let's see if we can get some other important quotes out of this. Radio Free Europe, Putin says West is forcing its will on the world. Well, it's the United States that's doing the forcing. He says this is a unipolar world created by the United States that has nothing in common with democracy and is unacceptable. A good quote from Putin. Everything that is going on in this world today is a consequence of attempts to implement a unipolar world concept. What is the result of that? Unilateral, often illegitimate actions have not resolved one single problem. On the contrary, they have caused new human tragedies and more tension. More people, significantly more people, are dying in such conflicts. Everything that is going on in this world today is a consequence of attempts to implement a unipolar world concept, says Putin. Some norms, in fact, almost the entire legal system of one country, primarily the United States, of course, have overstepped their national borders and are being imposed on other countries essentially in all areas, in economic, political, and humanitarian matters. Who is going to like that? After hearing the whining of Gates and the rest of them, Putin's spokesman says, this is not about confrontation. This is an invitation to think. Now, Putin does, in the Q&A, in the process of the discussion, not part of the prepared text, he does have a kind word for Bush. I consider the President of the United States is a decent man. He's also a friend. He's criticized for everything he does, but he is a decent man. He says Russia and the U.S. will never be enemies, and I agree with him. So you can see he's using Bush to say that his goal is not war. Back in a minute on Republic Broadcasting Network. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley broadcasting from Washington, D.C. If anybody had any doubt that the world is on the brink of a wider war, a general war, a war tendentially fought with nuclear weapons, then the timely war warning issued by Russian President Vladimir Putin today in Munich, Germany at the Verkunde Gesellschaft International Security Conference should have swept all of those doubts away. Putin is talking about the United States attempting to impose a unipolar system with world domination by the United States, one center of power, one center of force, one center of decision making, a world of one master, one sovereign. This is extremely dangerous. No one feels secure because no one can hide behind an international law. The system is ruinous, not only for those inside the system, but for the sovereign itself, because it destroys the sovereign from within. It has nothing to do with democracy. As regional wars proliferate, the numbers of victims increase. This is nourishing an arms race with the desire of countries to get nuclear weapons. He's also warning about the clear provocation to Russia of putting up anti-ballistic missile defenses in Poland and the Czech Republic, something that, of course, the U.S.-controlled media hardly ever talks about. He makes clear that he does want good relations with the United States. However, interference in Russian internal affairs has got to stop. The OSCE, Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, the sort of Helsinki watchdogs or Helsinki monitors going back to the mid-70s, he says this OSCE, attempts are being made to turn the OSCE into a vulgar instrument for protecting the political interests of one country or a group of countries in relation to other countries. In other words, the subversion of Ukraine, subversion of Georgia, subversion of Belarus, and so on down the line. Putin says, he charges, the OSCE has tailored a bureaucratic apparatus that has no connection with the founding countries, set up its decision-making procedures, and the use of the so-called non-governmental organizations, the NGOs, that are formally independent, but that are financed with a particular purpose, which means that they are under the control of those who fund them. Now, he says he understands that the world is concerned about the Iranian nuclear potential. They don't want Iranian nuclear weapons. However, he points out that Russia has sold defensive missiles to Iran so as to make sure that the Iranians do not feel backed into a corner. But again, he keeps coming back to the ABM systems in Poland and the Czech Republic, obvious preparations for a NATO first strike against Russia. He says, look, you say that you need these to defend against a North Korean missile threat? Even hypothetically, the launch of a North Korean missile towards the United States and to try to stop this over Western Europe goes against all the laws of ballistics. He says it's like the Russian proverb, trying to use your right hand to scratch your left ear. Doesn't make much sense. Let's go on here now to the Washington Post. I think they say a few things about the Iranian question. We are seeing increasing disregard of the fundamental principles of international law, says Putin. All our responses will be asymmetric but highly effective. The Russians are coming forward with a draft treaty on preventing the deployment of weapons into outer space. It will be submitted to the other powers as an official proposal in the very near future. Why do they have to move their military infrastructure closer to our borders? Is this somehow connected with overcoming the global threats of today? And again, today we are observing the unrestrained, hypertrophied use of force in international affairs, a force that plunges the world into an abyss of recurring conflicts. The use of military force in international relations can only be justified on the basis enshrined in the UN Charter. I am convinced, says Putin, that the UN Charter is the only legitimate decision-making mechanism for the use of military force as a last resort. The United Nations must not be replaced by either NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or the European Union. Putin says he did not, Russia did not contribute to Iranian missile technology. I have no evidence to show that Russia in the 1990s helped Iran create its own missile technologies. Other countries acted there. Technology was transferred through different channels. We have proof, and earlier I passed it directly to the U.S. President. Back in a minute here on World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley from Washington, D.C.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio here on Republic Broadcasting Network. This is Webster Tarpley from Washington, D.C. We are continuing to review the key quotes from Russian President Vladimir Putin's landmark war warning speech issued earlier today at the Munich Wehrkundegesellschaft International Security Conference in southern Germany. Concerning Iran now, Putin says that Russia is not responsible for the missile technology now in the hands of Iran. Technology is coming from Europe, from Asian countries. Russia has nothing to do with this. He says that he is basically in agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency concerning the Iranian nuclear program, that it would be good for the Iranians to barter a pause in uranium enrichment against the lifting of all economic sanctions. He does say Russia supplied less weaponry than the U.S. or other countries to Iran. Russia provided Iran with air defense systems with an effective range of 30 to 50 kilometers. And he, quote, says, "We did that so that Iran would not feel driven into a corner." Putin undercutting all the neocon hysteria. Iran has no missiles that could threaten Europe. As regards any fears that Iran has missiles that could threaten Europe, you are wrong, says Putin. Iran has missiles with a range of 1,600 to 1,700 kilometers. Calculate how many kilometers it is from the Iranian border to Munich, he says, and you will figure it out. Concerning energy relations, he says that Russia is perfectly willing to join with the European Union with an energy charter, but the energy charter, as currently phrased, is hard to accept. So he also wants Russia to be included in energy partnership and cooperation agreements, and that this kind of cooperation should extend to other areas. Now, concerning a possible war detonator in Europe, the threatened independence of Kosovo, remember the bombing of Kosovo back in 1999 by Mad Dog Gore and the other mad dogs of the Principals Committee, Albright, Sandy Berger, Richard Clark, Shelton, and the rest of them. The bombing of Kosovo and Serbia, of course, is a prelude now to the attempt to create an independent Kosovo state under the domination of the KLA, drug runners, gun runners, and terrorists working for NATO intelligence. So Putin says Russia will only support a solution to the Kosovo problem if everybody agrees. That is, the Kosovars and the Serbs must agree. Otherwise, Russia will oppose it. This is obviously a crisis gambit being put up by the Anglo-Americans. So again, I invite everybody to take a look at that speech when it comes up on the Kremlin website, kremlin.ru, President of Russia. It should be up there quite soon. It is going around the world. It has been the lead item on CBS Radio News all afternoon. And of course, this comes precisely in the middle of the biggest strategic crisis we've had since the Cuban Missile Crisis of October 1962. The war timing, if it's not going to be, well, we have essentially two leading possibilities. One is approximately a week from now, the new moon of February, February 17th. And if it's not February 17th, then it's a similar new moon around the middle of March. Beware the Ides of March. Beware the Ides of March as a possible time for a nuclear sneak attack by the U.S., Britain, and Israel against Iran. Call your congressperson. Tell them it's time to shut these people down. As one of the international papers notes, not one of the leading Democratic Party candidates for president has repudiated the idea of an early sneak attack on Iran. The disgusting duplicity of the Democratic Party. Hillary, Obama, and Edwards, not one of them has said no attack on Iran, no way. They're not willing to do that. Now let's get into the details of the military confrontation as it is shaping up. Again, February 17th or the Ides of March, possible time frame. Those Tor M1 missiles that the Russians have delivered, that Putin talked about in his speech, are operational. The Iranians in the past week have held war games in the Gulf and in the Gulf of Oman. I guess we better start calling it the Persian Gulf, just to make it clear to everybody. So in the Persian Gulf and in the Gulf of Oman, they were practicing. It looks like the Tor M1s are now operational. This will vastly increase the attrition of attacking aircraft attempting to carry out that nuclear sneak attack. We've also got the Junge Welt of Berlin, Germany, February 3rd edition, points out that the Eisenhower battle group is already in the area of the Arabian Sea. The Stennis, with its battle group, is arriving. On the 30th of January, the USS Boxer, an amphibious assault ship, a helicopter carrier quite large, with its group, arrived at the port of Dubai. The USS Batan, a second amphibious assault ship, passed the Suez Canal on February 1st. It will be at the Gulf in early February. We can consider it already arrived at this point. There's also news that the USS Ronald Reagan and its battle group is in the process of leaving San Diego. This was already on February 3rd. All crew members were told to report to the ship going off into the world. Now, there's also a report that one top naval officer has actually resigned his post while the warships were on their way to the Gulf. We're looking into that one, and we will have some details. That would be quite extraordinary, somebody essentially bailing out on what amounts to World War III. Spiegel, the German news magazine, quotes a top U.S. military figure saying, "As of right now, just one slip-up, and we are back to 1914, the outbreak of a murderous general world war." And of course, we've got all kinds of provocations on the ground. An Iranian diplomat has been kidnapped under U.S. supervision, and the Iranians have said, "We hold you, U.S., responsible for our diplomat." Kidnapping diplomats and going into embassies and consulates, of course, are international acts of war condemned under international law. Then we have the war warning coming from Ayatollah Khamenei, supreme leader of Iran, the head of the clerical councils that essentially dominate the country. He says, in effect, "You attack Iran, get ready to pay the price." He says, "Any attack on Iran would be an unwise and wrong move that would lead Iran to retaliate by targeting interests worldwide." He says there would be, a reaction from the Iranian nation on aggressors and their interests around the world. He says Bush does not appear to be a person who calculates the consequences of his actions, but even such people can be brought to their senses. There's also a statement from an Iranian naval commander saying that he has missiles that can sink big warships in the Gulf. Big warships, capital ships, well, today those are the aircraft carriers. Now, we have from Robert Gates, Iran-Contra Robert Gates, the founder of Al-Qaeda, now the U.S. Pentagon boss. Gates denies an intention to attack not once but twice. Does he protest too much? In Seville, Spain, Sevilla, he says, "The United States has no intention of attacking." He says, "Oh, those Iranians, they make these threats from time to time." And then on another occasion, February 3rd, he says, "Nobody is planning, we are not planning for a war with Iran." These, of course, assurances are worth the paper they're written on, if that. The Iranian intelligence ministry announces that 100 U.S. and Israeli spies have been arrested, and it appears that part of this group was arrested in the process of attempting to foment ethnic unrest among Kurds, among Arabs, and among Baluchis in different peripheral ethnic groups of the Iranian state. This is something we've gone through. It apparently prominently includes MEK, Mujahideen e Khalq, terrorists on the State Department list, nevertheless paid for by the Pentagon. Again, concerning the timing of the attack, Sam Gardner says, in his view, everything will be ready by the end of February. A source on the Internet says March 8th. It could be the fourth anniversary of the attack on Iraq. That would take it a little bit further into March, around the 20th, I think that is. Or how about just beware the Ides of March? Let's go back also to Cheney's Newsweek interview. We probably didn't stress it enough. February 5th, Newsweek, Cheney says no options have been taken off the table. We've also found out that new commandant of the Seth Fallon, the neutral command, is a NATO submarine black ops expert. His big specialty is how to use electronic and navigational jamming against enemy submarines. Now, the Iranians have a fairly capable fleet of small diesel-electric submarines, and that may be one of the things that Fallon is planning, in addition to the obvious air attacks. Fallon, according to some reports, is behind the famous Whiskey on the Rocks, the Russian submarine that ran aground in Sweden in the Baltic back in the, 1982, 1983. Congressman Ron Paul, Hats off to Congressman Ron Paul for doing yeoman service. Again, Democratic presidential candidates don't seem to want to do this, except for Congressman Kucinich, to whom we also give due credit. But Ron Paul this week confronts Ms. Rice at the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Ron Paul asks, Ms. Rice, will you state that the United States will not launch a preemptive attack on Iran? And, of course, Ms. Rice wiggles out of it. She says, Bush has said that our goal is not to attack Iran, but to respond to Iranian actions. And then Rice goes on, the world knows that Iran wants nuclear weapons. Well, we have IAEA reports and CIA reports that say that is not proven, and the world knows no such thing. This is now the everybody believe that argument that we've heard about WMD in Iraq, for example. Undersecretary of State Bill Byrne, who wants to dominate the building because of Rice's ineptitude, says Iran must learn to respect them. Rumpelstiltskin still says little again, Burns, Nick Burns of the State Department. Other harbingers of early war. Bush is reported to have attacked the Iraq study group, repeating it as a flaming turd. That is a quote from the Vanity Fair article by Craig Unger. Let's give some flavor of this. This is the new issue of Vanity Fair. He has Grover Norquist, the neocon economic policy boss on Capitol Hill, saying that Bush's advisors are telling him, attack Iran and everybody will see how smart we are. Now, as soon as it becomes a question of smarty pants, I think of the panty-waist Field Marshal Kagan of the American Enterprise Institute, who now seems to be the generalissimo of all U.S. forces because he's giving the orders by making the strategy. Richard Pearl says he has little doubt that Bush will order the necessary military actions. Joshua Murabchik in this article says Bush will need to bomb the Iranian facilities. Patrick Lang, former DIA official, says the significant thing is that Bush has told STRATCOM, the Strategic Command, to plan massive strikes against Iran. And he says this shows how ugly things have gotten, because it's no longer Central Command that's getting the order to attack, but it's STRATCOM, and that means a really big attack. Philip Giraldi, who's been on this case since the summer of 2005, says the Defense Department says, according to his sources, war with Iran is something that is going to happen. Iran redux, absolutely parallel to what was done with Iraq, says Giraldi. This guy Lang, usefully in this article, take a look at it in Vanity Fair, points to the encirclement question. He says the long supply lines from Kuwait to Baghdad are extremely vulnerable to RPGs. This is an obvious area of Iranian retaliation capabilities. There are also obviously people at the AEI, the Ladin Nest, talking about how to subvert the Azeris, the Kurds, the Baluchis, and so forth. Gardner points to the fact that minesweepers are prominently featured among the various warships now headed for the Gulf. This is to try to counteract another clear path of the Iranians towards retaliation. Remember also Zbigniew Brzezinski's warning that we featured last week, that the scenario is now an act of terrorism inside the United States that would be blamed on Iran. Journalists tried to nail down Zbigniew on the details of that, but Zbigniew slithered out. He's not going any further. But we now have a former director of the National Security Council who has pretty much openly stated that among the arsenal of possibilities for the U.S. regime, one is state-sponsored false flag terrorism. So the word has to be stop Cheney's new 9/11, stop Cheney's new Gulf of Tonkin incident. Zbigniew now says that the attack on Iran would be a severe political folly that might accelerate the end of the era of U.S. preponderance. There is in the Sunday Times of a week ago tomorrow an article by three U.S. generals, Lieutenant General Robert Gard, Full General Joseph P. Hoare, and Vice Admiral Jack Shanahan, these U.S. military leaders make an appeal to Tony Blair, telling Tony Blair he must do something to secure a diplomatic solution with Tehran. And the three of them, Gard, Hoare, and Shanahan, strongly warn against military force being used against Iran. Great Britain must condemn the use of force. There's no justification under international law for an attack. Ehud Olmert, the Prime Minister of Israel, talking out of both sides of his mouth, says there's no need for an attack. What do you mean, Olmert? Well, if the European Union, the U.S., China, and Russia impose crushing sanctions on Iran, that would force Tehran to reconsider. And he also says Iran is not as close to having a nuclear weapon as they pretend. Well, I don't think they pretend, but that's, of course, Olmert. President Assad of Syria on morning TV in the U.S. this past week says the U.S. is always ranting about troops and power, never about negotiations or political process. He says, we have been offering dialogue to the U.S. for 4 years. There's now an Iraqi civil war. We're not optimistic that they're going to respond. Haaretz of Israel on the 6th of February, commentary by Yoel Marcus. He says the new chief of staff of the Israeli Defense Force, Gabi Ashkenazi, also looked at this problem and just what Ashkenazi thinks will be telling you when we come back in a second here on the Crisis Radio. World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley in Washington, D.C., brought to you by Freedom Calendar. You can get a complimentary Freedom Calendar if you buy an Aronizer, a Berkey filter, and other products. You can see the offer for this on the Republic Broadcasting website, republicbroadcasting.org. Those are our fine sponsors, freedomcalendar.com. You get a free Bill of Rights handbook and a free calendar with those purchases just in time for 2007. You can mark all the main strategic crisis points, be it the new moon on February 17th, the Ides of March, the anniversary of the opening of the Iraq War. Haaretz of Israel, 6th of February, Yoel Marcus. He says the new head of the IDF, remember, Halutz is out, so the new chief of staff, Gabi Ashkenazi. What is the main problem for Ashkenazi, says Marcus, is he's got to prepare for a rain of bigger missiles than last summer's Katyushas, because this could now be Iran. He says Bush does not care about the polls. Bush is a lame duck, but that will not stop him from going on a bombing spree in Iran. Bush sees himself as the messenger of God. He wants to save the world from the threat of a crazy leader, Ahmadinejad. Interestingly, Marcus says the Jewish lobby in the United States is not happy about this attack because they feel that an attack on Iran could endanger Israel. And above all, they say Israel must avoid any overt involvement in this coming military clash. Prepare for bigger missiles. Certainly, whatever deception and prevarication may be implied here, it is clear that under the current leadership, Israel is being led into a catastrophic form of annihilation. Now, according to the London Times also of last week, the United States propaganda station Radio Farda says that a top Iranian nuclear scientist has died under the most mysterious circumstances. He is Ardasir Hassanpour. Hassanpour was 44. Was he murdered by the Mossad? He worked at the Isfahan uranium hexafluoride plant, a key part of the Iranian nuclear industry. I have a source from India, source Malabar, tells me that his Israeli contacts have confirmed this assassination. It was done by the Mossad, and it was approved by the United States. And he says this is very ominous because if you go back to pre-Osirak 1981, you'll see that the Israelis started killing Iraqi nuclear scientists at that point. Back in just a second on the other side of the top of the hour here on Republic Broadcasting.